or call 617-492-2777, extension 3490. Major funding provided by the United States Department of Education.
A logo appears. 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment. A message. The following film has been modified from its original version. It has been formatted to fit this screen. Another logo of the letters EP, Entertainment Partners. Now, on a snowy street, fog obscures ladies in cloaks and bonnets and gentlemen in top hats, making their way past the darkened houses and shops of Victorian London. A gas lamp's orange flame flickers dimly. The townspeople stand aside as a horse-drawn wagon passes.
Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of this story I am going to relate.
Inside the wagon sits a coffin. The townspeople watch as the meager procession goes by. Later, a young girl holds a donation cup as she sings. Titles appear. George C. Scott as Ebenezer Scrooge in A Christmas Carol. Based on the novel by Charles Dickens. With Nigel Davenport, Frank Finlay, Lucy Gutteridge, Angela Pleasance, Roger Rees, David Warner, Edward Woodward, Susanna York, Timothy Bateson, Derek Francis, Michael Gow, Caroline Langrish, John Quarmby, John Sharp, Joanne Wally, and Peter Woodthorpe, and introducing Anthony Walters as Tiny Tim. Music composed by Nick Bacot, conducted by Tony Britton. Executive producer, Robert E. Fweez. Screenplay by Roger O. Herson. Produced by William F. Stork and Alfred R. Kelman. Directed by Clive Donner. Now, two children peek into the window of a toy shop. On the street, a man tips his top hat. Lanterns glow dimly in the dusk. Two bundled-up women hurry past. Now, musicians parade through the dull gray fog, led by a recorder player wearing fingerless gloves. A rosy-cheeked girl and boy watch, hopping to keep warm. A merchant's horse-drawn wagon carries a load of holly branches. A poulterer brings down a goose from a rack. Now, a clerk gazes out an office window next to a sign, Scrooge and Marley.
7 years ago today.
What's that you say?
Mr. Marley died 7 years ago this very day.
Would it be too much to ask that you return to the work for which I pay you so handsomely?
Mr. Cratchit!
The fire's gone cold, Mr. Scrooge.
Come over here, Mr. Cratchit.
Gray-haired with mutton chops, Scrooge tugs his cuff.
What is this?
A shirt. And this? A waistcoat.
And this?
A coat.
These are garments, Mr. Cratchit. Garments were invented by the human race's protection against the cold. Once purchased, they may be used indefinitely for the purpose for which they are intended. Cold burns. Cold is momentary, and cold is costly. There will be no more coal burnt in this office today. Is that quite clear, Mr. Cratchit?
Yes, sir.
Now, please get back to work before I am forced to conclude that your services no longer required.
Yes, sir.
As the tall, lanky Cratchit returns to his desk, a young gentleman enters the dim, low-ceilinged office. He takes off his top hat.
Merry Christmas, Bob Cratchit.
And the same to you, Mr. Fred.
Fred strolls over to Scrooge's desk.
Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Scrooge looks up.
I said, Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Humbug.
Christmas, a humbug, Uncle. Surely you don't mean that.
I do. What's Christmas but a time for buying things for which you have no need, no money? Time for finding yourself a year older, Not an hour richer. If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled in his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Come now, Uncle.
Neville, you keep Christmas in your way and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it? But you don't keep it.
Let me leave it alone, then. Much good it may do you. Much good it has done you.
There are a great many things from which I might have derived good, from which I have not profited, I dare say. Christmas among the rest. But I've always thought of Christmas time when it comes right as a good time, a kindly, forgiving, charitable time. A time when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely to their fellow creatures. And so Uncle Bert has never put a scrap of gold or silver into my pocket. I do believe that it has done me good. And I say, God bless it.
Bob Cratchit applauds. Scrooge glares at him.
Not a sound from you. And you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation.
He turns to Fred.
You're quite a powerful speaker, sir. I wonder you don't go into Parliament.
Please don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow.
Dying. I'd see myself in hell first.
It would be a great joy to me. And to my wife.
Yes, your wife. I'm told she brought very little to the marriage. A poor girl, instead.
I love her. And she loves me.
Love. Good afternoon, nephew.
Fred leans close.
I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why can't we be friends?
You are wasting my time.
I'm sorry to find you so resolute. We've never had a quarrel, so far as I know. And so I shall keep my good humor. And wish you a Merry Christmas.
Goodbye.
And a Happy New Year.
He turns away.
How's that fine family of yours, Bob Cratchit?
Well, sir, all very well.
Good. You'll give them my best wishes.
Yes, sir, I shall. Thank you for remembering them.
Goodbye, Cratchit.
Goodbye, sir.
And a Merry Christmas.
Idiot.
Scrooge consults his pocket watch.
And he's made me late to do so.
He blows out his candle.
I'm off to the exchange. Don't lock up a moment early.
No, sir.
Bob Cratchit helps Scrooge into his overcoat. Scrooge takes his top hat from him, then glances away.
You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose.
If it's quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient. And it's not fair. If I were to hold back half a crown from your pay for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound. But you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
Christmas comes but once a year, sir.
Poor excuse. For picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. And I suppose you must have it. Be here all the earlier the next morning, Cratchit.
Yes, sir, I shall. I certainly shall.
Make sure.
Yes, sir. And a Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Scrooge.
Humbug! Ah!
Outside at dusk, a little boy hobbles up a lane on one crutch, his right boot trailing through the snow. He pauses at a doorstep as Scrooge emerges from his counting house.
Christmas, Mr. Scrooge.
Don't beg on this corner, boy.
I'm not begging, sir. I'm Tim Cratchit. I'm waiting for my father.
Tim Cratchit, huh? Well, then you'll have a long wait, won't you?
Thank you, sir.
Humbug.
Scrooge plods off. Later, children stand in a circle.
Our Savior Christ and His Lady, on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Our
Scrooge strides toward them along the lane.
Clear the road. Out of the way. Let me through.
Glowering, he barges past them to a foggy, snow-covered town square where more carolers join a brass band. A passing gentleman drops coins into their donation cup. Scrooge strides past, his broad, jowly face hunched between coat collar and top hat. Approaching the pillared portico of a stone building, he climbs the snowy steps and disappears inside. In a chandelier-lit hall, Scrooge makes his way among businessmen wearing frock coats and top hats.
Ah, oh, Ebenezer, we were afraid you weren't coming.
It's almost closing, sir.
Well, I'm here, aren't I?
I said you'd be here. Didn't I say Ebenezer Scrooge would be here? I knew you'd change your mind.
Right, I have changed my mind.
Oh, good, then you'll take our bid.
The price has gone up.
Gone up? But that's not possible.
You want my corn, gentlemen, you must meet my quote. Plus 5% for the delay.
That's outrageous, Scrooge. You'll be left with a warehouse stuffed with corn.
Well, that's my affair, isn't it?
But if we pay your price, our bread will be dearer. The poor will suffer.
Buy the corn someplace else. Good day, sir.
Scrooge, a moment. We'll take your corn at the price you quoted yesterday.
Too late. If you wait until tomorrow, it'll cost you another 5%.
Damn it, Scrooge, it's not fair.
No, but it's business. I'll give you a moment to make up your mind.
Scrooge steps away with a faint smile as the three businessmen discuss.
All right, Scrooge. Done and done.
Very good, General. Now, make sure that a draft for the entire amount of this transaction is deposited with my clerk. I don't ship until I have the cash in hand. Good day.
Two others approach him.
Mr. Scrooge, I presume.
Indeed you do, sir.
You don't know us.
Nor do I wish to.
My name is Poole, and this is Mr. Hatton.
Excellent. Now, if you'll allow me to pass.
Let me explain something. At this festive season of the year, it seems desirable that those of us with means should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at this time.
Provision? Are you seeking money from it, then?
Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons.
The workhouses, they're still in operation?
They are. I wish I could say they were not.
The treadmill, the poorhouses, still in full vigor?
All very busy, sir.
I was afraid from what you said that something had stopped them in full force.
A few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and food and warmth.
What can we put you down for, sir? Nothing.
You wish to be anonymous?
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. My taxes help to support the public institutions which I have mentioned, and they cost enough. Those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, perhaps they had better do so, and decrease the surplus population.
Surely you don't mean that, sir.
With all my heart. Now, if you will go about your business, gentlemen, and allow me to go about mine.
Poole and Hacking stare after him. Now, young Tim Cratchit waits outside Scrooge and Marley's counting house. Inside, his father blows out the candle over his desk, then fetches his top hat and long scarf from a coat peg. Downstairs, he stoops as he comes out the low front door and locks up.
Father!
Tim, you must be frozen.
I'm all right now.
Cratchit smiles.
Could we go home by Cornhill and watch the boys and girls play in the snow?
Of course we can.
He picks him up.
Tim, I'm to have the whole day off tomorrow. We'll be together, the whole family, for the entire day.
Hurrah for Christmas, the best day of the year.
Each bird will tell that in his heart and gold in all his days. His reason weak, his anger sharp, and sorrow all his pain.
At the plaza, boys slide on an ice patch.
Look.
They're having such fun, Father.
One boy slips. Others have a snowball fight.
You'll be there one day, playing with the other children.
I'm quite sure I will. I feel I'm getting stronger every day.
Tim holds tight to his father.
We must go home now. Your mother will be waiting for us.
Yes, it's time to go home.
Bob Cratchit makes his way across the packed snow, carrying Tim in one arm as he skirts the ribbon of ice where the boys slide again and again. Now, Ebenezer Scrooge walks alone down a narrow lane hemmed in by iron fences. The dusting of snow glows in the moonlight. Fog drifts through the night air. The heavyset black-clad Scrooge plods steadily forward. Behind him, a carriage approaches, its driver and two horses a pale, ghostly white. The horses wear feathery plumes. The carriage bears a white coffin. Scrooge stops and turns around.
Who's calling me? Someone call my name?
The carriage passes close by. Scrooge's keen gaze fixes on it as it draws away. At the end of the lane, it fades like a phantom into the thick fog. Scrooge scowls, shrugs, then presses on. Hunched, he follows his shadow on the thin layer of snow covering the way. Leaning heavily on his walking stick, he steps through a gateway and approaches the front door of a dark house. A brass knocker is set at eye level in the shape of a lion's head. Scrooge stares. A ghostly image of a man's face appears on it. The face fades away. Scrooge shakes his head and looks again. It's only the knocker. Exhaling a foggy breath, he slowly enters the house. Scrooge shuts the tall wooden door behind him and stoops to push the deadbolt. Standing in a foyer, he removes his top hat. His black overcoat blends into the shadows as he strikes a match and lights a stubby candle. His wispy gray hair sweeps back from his creased forehead down to the thick collar of his coat. The corners of his mouth pull down in a resolute frown. As he carries the candle along a hallway, he peers alertly ahead. He reaches a wide staircase and starts up with heavy, measured steps. Moonlight from a window throws his shadow on the wall. Holding the candle ahead of him, he heads through a dark hallway, past a sideboard with an intricately carved facade, to a door. The sitting room beyond lies in shadow, sparsely furnished. Still wielding his candle, Scrooge steps past an armchair by a hearth and grips the knob of another closed door. He opens it slowly and enters the shadowy bedchamber. Holding aloft the candle, Scrooge closes the door behind him and plods to the center of the room. His gaze fixes on the heavy brocade curtains of his four-poster bed. Turning away, he sets the candle on a side table and returns to his door. Gripping the knob with a wrinkled hand, he turns the key in the lock, then slides home two brass deadbolts. Scrooge glances around, his wide blue eyes searching the shadows. Later, he takes a bowl of gruel from a cast iron stove. Cupping the bowl gingerly in his hands, he blows on it. He settles into one of two facing armchairs with worn upholstery and slowly raises a spoonful of gruel to his lips. On the decorative tiles around the stove depicting the Last Supper, the ghostly man's face appears three times, then fades away. Scrooge rises and steps closer. The tiles show only Jesus and his disciples.
Humbug.
In a high corner, a call bell swings, draped in thick cobwebs. Scrooge stares with wide eyes. His chest heaves. He rubs his temple. Blinking, he turns and settles himself in his chair. He frowns, his mouth set in a grim line. Breathing heavily, he sits erect and grips the armrests. He turns his trembling head to the door. The deadbolts shoot open. The key in the lock turns by itself. Scrooge blinks and trembles. The door swings open. Scrooge jumps to his feet and faces the empty doorway. A ghost takes form, a short, pale man trudging under the weight of thick chains which wrap around him. Spectacles perch above his red-rimmed eyes. Scrooge stares.
What do you want with me?
The ghost unties a bandage from his head and his jaw drops open.
Much! Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
You're particular for a ghost. Who are you then?
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
Can you sit down?
I can.
Well, do it then.
Keeping its wild gaze fixed on Scrooge, the ghost shuffles to a chair by the hearth and sits. The thick chains bear a padlock, cash boxes, and a ledger book.
You don't believe in me.
I don't.
What evidence would you have of my reality beyond that of your own senses?
I don't know.
Why do you doubt your senses?
Because a little thing affects them, a slight disorder of the stomach. You might be a bit of bad beef, a blot of mustard, a fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are. Humbug, I tell you, humbug!
Scrooge cowers beside his chair.
Mercy. Dreadful apparition. Why do you trouble me?
Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?
I do, I must. Why do spirits walk the earth? Why do you come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world and witness what it cannot share, but might have shared. And turn to happiness!
The chain. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. Is its pattern strange to you? Or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was as full, as heavy, and as long as this seven Christmas Eves ago, you have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain.
I see no chain.
Mine were invisible until the day of my death, as yours shall be.
Tell me more. Speak. Comfort to me.
I have none to give. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house. In life, my spirit never roved beyond the narrow limits of our money-changing hole.
No doubt of that. You always were a good man of business.
Business! Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my bitterness.
I'm sorry for you, Jacob. Is there anything I can do for you?
For me? Nay, it is too late. But I have come for your sake, Ebenezer.
Have you? Well, you always were a good friend.
The ghost rises.
As part of my penance, I have been sent to warn you.
And so you have.
And to offer you a hope and chance of escaping my fate, you will be haunted by three spirits.
Three spirits?
Is that the chance and hope you mentioned?
It is.
Well, in that case, I think I'd rather not. Expect the first tonight, when the bell tolls one.
Couldn't they all come at the same time, Jacob, and have it over?
Expect the second on the stroke of two. The third, more mercurial, shall appear in his own good time.
The ghost steps toward the window.
Look to me no more. Look that you may remember what has passed between us.
It beckons, and Scrooge rises with a frown. The ghost wraps the bandage under its chin, then ties it on top of its head. Its gaping mouth snaps shut. It points a warning finger. Behind it, the window slides open. The ghost fades into transparency and floats out into the black night. Its body grows smaller and smaller, then disappears. Wind buffets the curtains as Scrooge advances toward the open window. He stares down at the deserted front gate, then slides the window shut.
Humbug.
He treads heavily to the door. It's now closed. He bends to peer at the key, then straightens and frowns at the top deadbolt. It's locked. Scrooge takes a breath. His gaze flickers around the shadowy room. Then he shakes his head and nods to himself.
Something I ate.
Later, outside in the night, a tower clock strikes one. In Scrooge's bedchamber, the brocade curtains hang thick around the four-poster bed. On a table, his gold pocket watch hangs on a stand. Scrooge awakens and slowly sits up.
One. What was it Marley said?
His eyes search the darkness.
Nothing.
He frowns quizzically.
Just a dream, then.
A wind starts up, tossing his hair and swaying the curtains round his bed. Scrooge squints. In the air before him, a point of light twinkles like a star. The curtain blows back, revealing a woman clad in a white dress.
Are you the spirit whose coming was foretold to me?
I am.
Who and what are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
No, your past.
Perhaps you would do me the favor of placing upon your head that cap that you hold in your hand.
I bring the light of truth. Would you use this cap to put it out?
I beg your pardon, I had no intention of offending. What business brings you here?
It is for your welfare that I appear.
I can think of no greater welfare than a night of uninterrupted sleep.
Be careful, Ebenezer Scrooge. I speak of your reclamation.
Well, if it's reclamation, then let's get on with it.
The spirit reaches out to him.
Come.
Scrooge stands and takes her hand. Thick mist engulfs them both.
We shall be invisible.
An image comes into view on the cone-shaped cap.
You will now see a child, a youth. You will see yourself, Ebenezer.
Daytime in a country wood.
The air is so clean. How different from the city.
Do you know where you are?
Of course, I was bred here. I was a boy in this place. That's Daniel Custis.
Three boys drive a horse cart.
Hello, Daniel.
Scrooge watches more boys ride past on ponies.
The big one there, that's David. Tyler, David! Look here, it's Ebenezer!
I told you, Ebenezer, they can't hear you.
How happy they all seem.
That's right, they do. Yes, well, it's time to move on. Come along, Ebenezer. You know the way.
I could walk it blindfolded.
In a schoolhouse, a boy reads alone.
Your school.
I remember.
And it's Christmas Day.
There's a boy in there, neglected.
The boy is deserted by his friends and his family.
His mother is dead. His father holds him a grudge.
Why does his father hold him a grudge?
She died in childbirth. His birth.
Weep for the boy, if the tears will come.
He has his friends, even on this day. From his beloved books. There's Ali Baba. Dear old honest Ali Baba. And the Sultan's groom, turned upside down with a genie.
But not a real child to talk to. Not a living person.
Robinson Crusoe, not real. And Friday, and the parrot, with green body and yellow tail, not real. He made do, this boy.
Let us see another Christmas Day. When you were a youth.
A young lady comes in.
Fair.
She runs to young Ebenezer, now in his teens.
Fair.
Dear brother!
They embrace.
I've come to bring you home, dear brother. To bring you home. Home.
Casting his eyes down, Ebenezer sits.
Home, little fan?
Yes. Home for good and all. Father's much kinder than he used to be. He spoke to me so gently one dear night that I was not afraid to ask once more if you might come home. And he said, yes, you should. And sent me in a coach to bring you.
Ebenezer rises and steps away. Golden shoulder-length hair frames his narrow face.
You're quite a woman, little fan.
And you. You are to be a man now. And never come back here.
He grins.
Come along, we mustn't keep Father waiting.
Outside, an older gentleman waits with a tight-lipped frown.
Father!
There, boy, there. Stand still now. Let me look at you. They haven't been overfeeding you, that's certain.
I've grown, I think.
Yes, most boys do. Fan has told you you won't be moving back here.
Yes, sir.
It's time you made your way in the world. I've arranged an apprenticeship for you. You'll move into Mr. Fezziwig's establishment in 3 days' time.
3 days, Father? I'd hoped we'd have my brother home for longer.
Longer? 3 days is quite long enough for both of us. Don't you think, Ebenezer?
Yes. Quite long enough.
Scrooge stands behind his younger self.
You finished back there?
All safe and secure, sir.
The carriage, Fan.
Fan climbs into the black carriage.
We're on our way. Into the carriage, boy.
Young Ebenezer obeys. Scrooge's dark frown mirrors his father's as he regards them through the window. He turns to the flaxen-haired spirit.
Fan pleaded for more time, but my father was a very stern man. Fan.
She died a young woman.
She had such a generous nature. Yes, too young.
Old enough to bear a child.
One son.
Fred, your nephew.
Fred Hollowell, yes.
Who bears a strong resemblance to your sister.
Does he? I never noticed.
You never noticed? I'm beginning to think you've gone through life with your eyes closed. Open them. Open them wide.
Images flow across the spirit's cap. We see a shop merchant sitting at a high desk.
You know this man?
It's old Fezziwig.
Oh, yes, my dear. Would you ask Mr. Pudding to refer that matter to Mr. Scrooge, eh? Thank you, my dear.
And you know this place?
No, was I not apprenticed here?
You. Hey,
Okay, attention, everybody. Dick, Ebenezer, pens down. No more work tonight, boys. It is Christmas Eve. So, close those letters down, Ebenezer and Dick. Clear away in here, everybody. We need the room.
He bustles around the warehouse.
Here we go, lad. You'll enjoy yourself tonight, Master Ebenezer. That is an order.
Yes, sir, I'll try.
Well, put your heart in it. You put enough of yourself into your work, and I've nothing but praise for the way you've discharged your duties. But you're young, eh? There's more to life than bolts of cloth and musty old ledgers, eh?
Later, they decorate the high-ceilinged room.
It's Mrs. Fezziwick and the three daughters and their suitors.
Scrooge's broad grin fades.
Belle, I've forgotten how beautiful she was.
Ebenezer joins the petite, delicate-featured young lady.
Hello, Belle.
Hello.
Would you like to dance?
Yes.
A young chap wearing spectacles climbs onto Fezziwig's desk with his fiddle. The guests join hands in a circle, then skip forward as Belle twirls in the center. A smile brightens her rosy cheeks as she coyly waves her handkerchief. She chooses Ebenezer. They take hands and dance together. Ebenezer pulls Belle close and kisses her lips. Off to the side, old Scrooge grins and nods his head to the music.
How long since you danced, Ebenezer?
He sobers.
Waste of time dancing.
You didn't think so then?
There was a reason then.
There's been a change in you since you'll come to Fezziwig's. You were so gloomy.
Oh, I think I should warn you, Miss Belle. I am of a serious bent of mind.
I consider seriousness to be an admirable trait of character, but it can be overdone.
I should take heed of your advice, ma'am, and go through life with a grin on my face.
A smile touches Scrooge's lips, then he looks down. In the main room, the fiddler joins the dancers. A little girl pairs with him, holding her skirt with one hand as she spins. Meanwhile, Fezziwig finds Belle and Ebenezer.
Come along, you two. They're striking up Sir Roger de Coverley. Time enough to sample the punch when you're old and fat like me, eh? Oh, I'd best partner my wife before that young scamp goes dancing off with her. What a difference it makes, Ebenezer, to travel the rough road of life with the right female to help bear the burden, eh? What a lucky man I am.
He returns to the party.
Shall we join the others, Ebenezer?
My pleasure, Miss Bell.
The gentlemen and the ladies line up facing one another, then peel off with skipping steps. Ebenezer and Belle form an arch with their hands, and the other couples parade under. The fiddler comes last. After the party, Scrooge and the spirit remain.
Old Fezziwig, a silly man.
Silly? Why silly?
What did he do, after all, to deserve the praises of those apprentices? Spent a few pounds, danced like a monkey, beamed a great smile.
Well, the happiness I gave was quite as great as though it had cost £1,000. Just small things.
In a bunk room, Ebenezer and his fellow apprentice lie awake.
Belle, are you in love, Ebenezer? The thought had occurred to me.
She's too good for you.
One day, when I've made my fortune, then I'll deserve her.
It was a night never to be forgotten.
Never.
But you did forget, often.
No?
Look, another Christmas Eve, delayed by the pressure of business. Do you remember?
No.
Belle waits on a bench by the bank of a frozen river. Ebenezer hurries up to her.
Hello, Belle.
Now do you remember?
Sorry I'm late.
I thought you might not come. I know how busy you are.
Well...
He sits beside her.
The time of year, and the nature of my business. It's important now that I use my time and opportunities wisely.
Another idol has displaced me.
What idol has displaced you?
A golden one. All your hopes have merged into a master passion. Profit. The thought of money engrosses you.
Perhaps I've become wiser. But I've not changed towards you.
Our contract is an old one. It was made when we were young and our prospects limited. How often I've thought of those times. If there had been no understanding between us, would you seek me out and try to win me now? A dowerless girl with nothing but myself to bring to a marriage. You have no answer.
His blue eyes flutter.
You think I would not then?
Oh, Ebenezer, what a safe and terrible answer. So characteristic of the careful man. Ebenezer, I release you. You are a free man. I let you go with a full heart. May you be happy in the life you have chosen.
Belle turns and slowly walks away. Ebenezer stares after her. He grips his walking stick and bows his head.
I almost went after her.
Almost carries no weight, especially in matters of the heart. And you did have a heart, didn't you, Ebenezer? Why didn't you follow her?
Upon his death, my father left me a small inheritance. Belle wished to be married, insisting that we could get along on very little. But I wanted something more for both of us. So I lent out that money, laid the foundations for financial success, which I have achieved, I may add.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you not to sneer. Spirit, show me no more. Conduct me home.
You have explained what you gained. Now I will show you what you have lost.
The scene changes. A woman cradles her baby.
Belle.
Yes. Belle.
And those are her children.
In a snowy courtyard, Belle gathers her three daughters and a son.
Oh, Lord, what a brood.
A hackney carriage drawn by two horses enters the yard. As it comes to a stop, Belle and her children hurry to meet it. A top-hatted gentleman emerges.
Hello, hello.
He kisses Belle.
Hello, Papa. Where's my present? Where's my present?
You will have to wait until tonight. All of you. Presents on Christmas Eve, as usual.
Fancy. It might have been mine.
The same thought occurred to me.
I saw an old friend of yours in the city this afternoon.
Who was it?
Guess.
I can't. I don't know. Ebenezer Scrooge.
Mr. Scrooge it was. I passed his office window and it was not shuttered. He had a single candle lit upon his desk. His partner, Jacob Marley, lies on the point of death, I hear. And there he sat, Ebenezer Scrooge, alone. Quite alone in the world, I do believe.
Poor Ebenezer. Poor wretched man.
Spare me your pity. I have no need of it.
They can't hear you.
And as for you, I've had enough of your pictures from the past. Leave me! Haunt me no longer!
The spirit grins.
Truth lives.
Scrooge forces the cap down upon the spirit's head as if extinguishing a candle. White light spills from underneath, then fades, and Scrooge is alone in his bedchamber, twisting a rug in his clenched hands. He stares down at the rug and lets go of it. His wide-eyed gaze lifts.
A nightmare. Horrible nightmare.
Scrooge gets stiffly to his feet.
God, let me sleep.
He crawls onto his bed.
Let me sleep in peace. Peace.
Yeah. Outside, snow falls lightly as the tower clock strikes two. Scrooge lies asleep on top of the covers. His pocket watch hangs on its stand. His eyes blink open. He sits up, his stringy gray hair in disarray.
Two.
He looks around the room.
Well, Jacob Marley, where is this spirit of which you spoke so glibly? You did say at the stroke of two, didn't you, Jacob? Mistaken in death, as you were in life, old partner.
He fluffs his pillow and settles down to sleep.
Ebenezer Scrooge!
Under the door, a fiery light glows.
Ebenezer Scrooge!
Scrooge sits up, pushes aside the bed curtains, and faces the light.
Come in!
I intend to.
Rising, he opens the chamber door. Brilliant white light pours over him as he steps through.
Come in and know me better, man.
In the adjoining room, a kingly bearded spirit clad in a velvet robe bears a torch.
You've never seen the likes of me before, eh?
It's quite true, I have not.
You never walked forth with any of the younger members of my family?
No, not that I remember.
Nor any of my elder brothers born these later years?
I'm afraid not, no. Do you have many brothers, spirit?
1800!
Scrooge smiles uncertainly.
Tremendous family to provide for.
Take hold of my robe, Ebenezer Scrooge.
Leafy garlands and platters of food fill the room. Scrooge places his hand on the curly-haired spirit's fur cuff, and our gaze glides up the spirit's torch to its steady golden flame. The scene changes to a sunny day on a bustling London street, where Scrooge and the spirit stroll among the townsfolk.
What day is it now?
Don't you know? Christmas morning!
The spirit towers head and shoulders above Scrooge as the two walk through an outdoor market. At one table, a woman wearing a woven bonnet watches a fishmonger cut off the head of a small fish. Other shoppers cluster around stalls selling nuts and bread rolls. A poulterer holds a live goose. A butcher sharpens his knife, then hacks a piece of meat with a cleaver. Scrooge rubs his hands and turns to his kingly companion.
There's a lot of buying, isn't there?
Oh, Ebenezer, is that all you can see? Follow me, and I'll show you to what good use these wares can be put.
Is there some peculiar power which emanates from your torch?
Oh, yes. There is.
The spirit smiles. Stepping aside, he stares into his torch's flickering flame, and the scene changes to a snowy back street. The spirit leads Scrooge to a narrow, clapboard house.
Do you know this house?
Yeah, I guess I do.
It is the house of Bob Cratchit.
Is he? Well, he does very well on 15 bob a week.
Shall we go in?
I wouldn't want to disturb him.
As with Christmas past, we shall be invisible and unheard.
Inside, with Mrs. Cratchit.
I wonder what's keeping your father.
He's probably stopped to talk to the parson. Father always likes to compliment him on his sermons.
I do hope the pudding's a success this year.
No one makes a better pudding than you, Mother.
Her son bites a potato.
Okay, time for the rest of the family.
Just testing the cooking, Mother.
I'm sure they'll manage very well in their own without your help, young man.
Hello, Mother. Smell the goose cooking, Martha.
Yes, it makes my mouth water.
Mine too.
I can't wait.
Well, you'll just have to.
Now run along with Martha and help her butter the bread thinly.
Here they are!
A younger son opens the door to Bob and Tim.
Merry Christmas, everyone!
You're late, Bob Cratchit. Oh, and you're quite like an icicle tin. You've been dawdling.
Father had a long talk with the minister.
Not as much.
Come, Tim, listen to the pudding hissing on the fire.
It's like a giant snake inside the copper.
Go along with your brother and sister, Tim. I'll begin the wine.
The young son and a daughter carry Tim between them.
Come on.
How did you behave in church?
As good as gold. Better.
Scrooge and the spirit watch.
Look how they support him.
What did you say?
Nothing. It's nothing.
Somehow he gets thoughtful sitting by himself so much. He thinks the strangest things. He told me coming home that he hoped that the people in church saw him because he was a cripple, and that it might be pleasant for them to remember on Christmas Day who it was that made lame beggars walk and blind men see. It seems to me that Tim is getting stronger every day, that his limbs are growing, that he's in better spirits, it seems to me.
Yes, Bob. I'm sure you're right. He is getting stronger.
Well, we're all here. That's the important thing.
Belinda, help me with the goose.
Yes, Mother.
Bob sets Tim's crutch on two pegs by the cooking hearth, then faces his eldest son.
Peter, I have some good news for you. I met by chance this morning at church a fine gentleman, Fred Holywell by name. He's the nephew of our own Mr. Scrooge. And he remembered that I have a son coming of working age, and he told me that he had a position open starting at 3 shillings and 6 pence every week.
3 shillings and 6 pence every week?
So, if you are agreeable, you may start work on Monday next.
Now I can begin to help you and Mother.
More important, you shall be embarking on a fine career.
To start a boy at 3 and 6 pence a week. Hey, it's typical of my nephew. No wonder he's never been able to put by a penny.
Perhaps he's put by more than money.
Fred?
He's doing this to spite me, you know? Employing the son of my employee at an exorbitant wage.
Mrs. Cratchit carries a covered platter to the table and the family gathers.
Quiet, 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 children, quiet.
She lifts the cover, revealing a small cooked goose.
Enough for an army!
So brown and crisp.
Mother,
you've outdone yourself.
Is it all right, then? Hurry, Father, cut the goose. I can't wait.
Haven't we forgotten something?
The Cratchits fold their hands.
Lord, we thank you for the bounty you have placed before us. We thank you for this day of love and joy. We thank you for allowing us to be together, to share with each other and with you the fullness of our hearts on this special day.
Amen.
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 What? You say something?
Scrooge shakes his head.
No.
Oh, well, I thought I...
No, I said nothing.
The spirit nods. At the table, Bob Cratchit serves a slice of meat to his youngest daughter.
Alice.
Looking on, Scrooge shakes his head.
Very small goose.
It's all Bob Cratchit can afford.
Me. Are you served?
Yes, yes, sir.
Then let's begin. And a Merry Christmas to us all.
A Merry Christmas to us all.
And God bless us, everyone.
Bob smiles down the table at his son, then starts in on the meal. Scrooge watches Tim as the pale young boy eats hungrily.
Tell me, Spirit, will he live?
I see a vacant place at this table. I see a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
No, say he will be spared.
If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none other of my species will find him here. But if he is to die, then let him die.
and decrease the surplus population.
You use my own words against me.
So perhaps in the future you will hold your tongue until you have discovered what the surplus population is and where it is. It may well be that in the sight of heaven you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor man's child.
Scrooge turns away from the spirit's bright gaze. Later, Mrs. Cratchit beams as she brings a round plum pudding to the table and sets it in front of her husband. They all blow on it, and Mrs. Cratchit whisks away the holly branch garnish. Bob cuts a spoonful of the dark pudding, glances up at his wife, and places it in his mouth. As he chews, a thoughtful frown crosses his face. Everyone watches him. He looks at his wife and smiles.
A triumph, my dear. Another triumph.
I told you so, Mother.
Oh, it's a success. What a relief for Mrs. Cratchit. Now their feast is over.
Not quite. Just one more ceremonious moment. Look.
Under a sprig of mistletoe tacked to a ceiling beam, Mother and Father Cratchit share a warm kiss and a glad embrace.
Now I would like to propose a toast to Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge, the founder of our feast. Mr. Scrooge.
Bob raises his mug and the others follow suit. His wife sits.
The founder of our feast indeed. I wish I had him here. I'd give him a piece of my mind to feast upon and hope he had a good appetite for it.
My dear, the children, it's Christmas Day.
It should be Christmas Day when one would drink the health of such a stingy, odious, mean, hard, unfeeling man as Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge.
My dear, have some charity.
Under her husband's gaze, Mrs. Cratchit softens.
Oh, well.
She rises.
I'll drink his health. For your sake. And the day's sake. But not for his.
She raises her cup.
Long life, Mr. Ebenezer Scrooge. A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I've no doubt his Christmas will be very merry. And he'll be very happy.
Mr. Scrooge.
Mr. Scrooge.
Mr. Scrooge.
Mr. Scrooge.
Mr. Scrooge.
Mr. Scrooge.
As they drink, Scrooge shrugs.
Well, he's made a point, Bob Cratchit has. Without me, there would be no feast, no goose at all. My head for business has furnished him employment.
Is that all you've learned by observing this family on Christmas Day?
Oh, no, not all, but one must speak up for oneself, for one's life.
The family gathers by the stove.
Here we come a-whistling among the leaves so green. Here we come a-wandering so fair to be seen. Love and joy come to you, and a Merry Christmas too. And God bless you and send you a Happy New Year.
We have some time left. Take my robe.
Love and joy come to you, and a Merry Christmas too.
Our view glides over their smiling faces to a window glowing with daylight. The spirit's torch burns fiercely, and the scene changes to a curving block of elegant brick townhouses.
Where are we now?
Just a street. Any street. This house. We'll go in here. Think it might amuse you.
I'm in no mood to be amused.
In a parlor, young gentlemen and ladies lounge and converse. A pretty brunette woman playing the piano glances up with a smile that warms her gentle features. She looks over her shoulder at Fred Hollowell.
Dear husband, do you find my playing so amusing?
Oh, I'm sorry, my love. I was thinking of his face yesterday. Humbug, he said. Humbug. He said that Christmas was a humbug. He believed it, too.
I'd very much like to meet your uncle, sir.
The Scrooge and the spirit look on.
He's a comical fellow.
But not so pleasant as he might be.
His offences carry their own punishment.
Dear brother-in-law, it's said he's very rich.
Yes, well, that is very true. But his wealth is of no use to him. He doesn't do any good with it. He doesn't even make himself comfortable with it.
You must squander it. That's what you mean by comfortable.
You mustn't argue with those we visit. It's useless and even tactless.
Tact is quality I despise.
That I can see.
I have no patience with him.
Well, I have, and I feel sorry for him.
Sorry for me?
Who suffers from his ill whims? Himself, always. Here, he takes it in his heart to dislike us and not come and dine with us.
And he loses a very good dinner indeed.
The reason that I talk about my uncle so is that my mother, God rest her saintly soul, was very fond of him. She loved him.
It's true. Fan loved me and I her. Dear Fan, I wish she were alive today.
Fred looks very like her.
Yes, I've been reminded of that just recently.
I was only going to say that the consequences of his taking a dislike to us and not making merry with us is that he loses some pleasant moments which could do him no harm. And I mean to give him the same chance every year, whether he likes it or not.
And every year he'll say, Christmas.
Looking on, Scrooge smirks.
Come, my dear, we must see to our guests.
The young couple parts. Scrooge grimaces.
Oh, yes. Can't help myself think.
Well, they seem to be happy.
Well, I suppose that free food and drink would be an occasion for pleasure to most people.
Happy in each other's company, I mean.
Everyone, hush there. We shall have a game, a word game.
Yes, a game.
What should it be?
Similes.
Does everyone know the rules to similes? All right, everyone. Now, you shall each have 5 seconds to answer. I'll ask the question. Mr. Topper, you'll keep count.
Well, I shall do my best.
Now, you'll each have 5 seconds to answer. If you fail to give an acceptable answer within that time, then you must each stand behind your chair. Last one to who's seated wins the prize.
Fred, Fred, don't go on so. Just begin.
Oh, I'm sorry, my love. Yes, I shall. Yes, I shall.
Fred chooses one of his guests.
Proud as.
Proud as a peacock.
So, dry as.
As a bone.
He turns to a couple.
Plump as.
My wife.
Sorry.
Plump as.
One.
2 seconds.
A partridge.
Quick as.
Oh. Wind.
No.
One, two, three, four, five.
A wink, you idiot.
Ebenezer.
Shh. Who said they could neither see nor hear us?
That's quite true. Oh, yes, yes, sorry. Even I forget the regulations sometime. After all, I do not come back very often.
Shh, I'm trying to listen to the game.
Modest as?
A maiden.
No.
Well, I'm sure it's a well-known simile.
Well, I was thinking of modest as a violet.
Right.
However, I will accept your answer. Janet.
He stands over his wife.
Attend. Tight as.
Tight as.
A drum. Anyone knows that.
Tight as.
Not very bright, my nephew's wife.
Tight as your Uncle Scrooge's purse strings.
Janet, that's quite wrong. And your time is up. You've lost and you must stand behind your chair.
Janet gets up.
Tight as a drum. That's what I was thinking of.
Good for you, Fred. The boy's got a head on his shoulders. And as for the laughter at my expense, spirit, I'm inclined to overlook it in view of the general gaiety of the evening.
It is now time to leave this pleasant scene. We have one more visit to make before my time is done. Take hold of my robe.
Scrooge rests his hand on the furry cuff.
Red as.
Red as a rose.
Yeah. Silent as.
The night.
No.
A mouse.
Not at all.
No, I know. The grave.
Outside in the night.
Where are we now? I'm sure I don't know this place.
The name would mean nothing to you. It's a place. Like many in this world.
Inside a giant arching tunnel. A family huddles around a fire.
Do we have enough wood for the night?
Ah, it'll last through. At least there's one thing still free in this country.
The young mother checks a baking potato.
Mary, a piece of egg cooked.
They're too hot.
It'll be cold soon enough.
Where did you get these, Father?
I didn't steal them, if that's what you're saying.
She didn't say you stole them, Ben.
She should have some respect.
Don't berate the girl. They fell from a cart into the road.
Your father's not a thief, girl. Not yet.
In his worn trousers and waistcoat, Ben limps away from his family towards Scrooge and the spirit.
Why are these people out here? Men and women in rags, children eating scraps. They're institutions.
Have you visited any of them, these institutions you speak of?
No, I'm taxed for them. Isn't that enough?
Is he?
Wrapped in a shawl, the thin mother joins her husband.
Ben, come back to the fire.
Look at these hands, Meg. They're hard hands. They've done hard work. I want to work. I want to have bread for my children. It's not right that there's no work.
We're together, Ben. That's the important thing.
I love you, Meg. I love the children. Tomorrow, take the children and go to the parish poorhouse.
No. No. I'd rather we all drowned in the river than go to one of those places and be separated forever.
Until I get work.
No. Ben, we're a family. We stay together. Come. Come back to the fire. Come.
Watching them, Scrooge blinks uncomfortably and takes a deep breath. Meg and Ben head back to their children at the fire. Scrooge steps away and spreads his hands.
Why do you show me this? What has it to do with me?
Are they not of the human race? Look here! Beneath my robe!
He parts his robe, revealing two children standing side by side.
Look upon these!
The boy and girl are twins, scrawny and haggard and dressed in rags.
What are they?
They are your children! They are the children of all who walk the earth unseeing. Their names are ignorance and want. Beware of them. For upon their brow is written the word doom. They spell the downfall of you and all who deny their existence.
Have they no refuge, no resource?
Are there no workhouses? Are there no prisons?
Scrooge attempts a smile. The children stare at him with darkly circled eyes.
Cover them. I do not wish to see them.
I've thought as much.
He closes his robe.
They are hidden. But they live. Oh, they live. Well.
The spirit grins.
Time has come for me to leave you, Ebenezer Scrooge.
Leave me here?
Oh, yes.
Well, you cannot take me back to my bed.
It's too late.
It's cold. The place is strange. Don't leave me.
A brilliant white glare bursts over him and then is gone.
Spirit?
Scrooge's gaze darts around.
Come back! I wish to talk!
Scrooge finds himself completely alone in the cavernous tunnel.
Perhaps I have made a mistake here and there. Talked too quickly about matters which I gave no great thought. Very well, we'll have a give and take. Come to some meeting of the minds. I'm a reasonable man. Spirit! Have pity on me. Don't leave me.
Scrooge slumps down. Moonlight throws shadows of bare tree branches on his dressing gown.
What have I done? To be abandoned like this.
He bows his head. His shoulders sag. Now a sudden low-lying mist ripples like waves over the ground. At the far end of the tunnel, a dawning light reveals a tall figure in a long black robe. Scrooge lifts his head and stares at the motionless specter. Its silhouetted form swells at the sides as if its arms were spreading under the billowing robe.
Are you the spirit which Jacob Marley foretold would visit me?
The spirit inclines its shrouded head. Scrooge straightens.
Then I am in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come, am I not?
The spirit nods again. Scrooge steps forward.
You're about to show me the shadows of the things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so? I fear you. More than any specter I have seen.
The spirit swells. Its shadow stretches across the fog.
But I am prepared to bear your company. Will you not speak to me? Very well. Lead on. Night is waning fast. Time is precious to me.
A thin-fingered hand emerges from the spirit's robe, pointing. Scrooge squares his shoulders and starts forward. The hem of his dressing gown trails through the low mist. The scene changes to an open square in London. The Exchange Building looms beyond groups of huddled businessmen.
This place, I know it very well. The Exchange, it's like a second home to me.
The spirit's shadow spreads across the snow. Its outstretched finger points to the pillared entrance of the Exchange. Inside, three businessmen meet.
No, I don't know much about it either way. I only know he's dead.
When did he die?
Last night, I believe.
What happened to his money?
Left it to his company, perhaps. Who else did he have?
It'll likely be a very small funeral, supposing we volunteered and form a party.
I'll go if lunch is provided, but I insist on being fed for the time I'll waste.
Have these men no respect for the dead?
I should go, I suppose. After all, we did considerable business together.
Well, I must go and find the price of corn. Goodbye.
How was I privy to that conversation? What purpose could it have for me?
The spirit's shadow falls across him. Lightning branches across the night sky. We see the lion's head door knocker, then a bed where a body lies under a sheet. Scrooge slowly steps into the room. To the side, two chairs sit by a hearth. Scrooge approaches the bed.
Merciful heavens, what is this? Spirit. This is a fearful place. I wish to leave it.
He shields his eyes. The spirit stands at the window, silhouetted by the lightning's flash. It points a bony finger toward the bed. Scrooge's trembling hand reaches toward the shrouded figure on the bed, then clenches and pulls back.
No, I will not. This you cannot make me do. I say I understand you. That is sufficient to the moment. Furthermore, there must be someone in this city who feels some emotion because of this man's death. I demand to see that person.
The scene changes to a dingy slum infested with drunkards.
This is a most foul part of town. It must have been a mistake, taking a wrong turn.
The spirit raises its hand and points to the left. Scrooge trudges along a decrepit stone balcony to a short staircase. Descending gingerly, he walks past the motionless spirit toward a doorway that glows orange from a fire within. He stops outside the smoking entrance and looks back at the spirit.
In there? I have no business to transact in there.
Scrooge steps through the low doorway and finds himself in a shadowy pawn shop. Among the scraps of fabric hanging from the ceiling, an old woman meets with the grubby pipe-smoking shopkeeper.
Well, who
it up, Mrs. Dilber. I might pay you for goods I haven't seen.
You'll not ask me how I came by these.
Every person has a right to take care of himself.
Yes. He unfolds a bundle filled with trinkets.
And who's the worse for the loss of a few things? Mm. Not a dead man, I suppose.
No, indeed.
I mean, if he'd wanted to keep him after he was dead, the wicked old screw, why wasn't he more natural in his lifetime? Mm. If he had been, he'd have had someone to look after him when he was struck with death. Instead of lying there, gasping out his last.
The shopkeeper examines a gold pocket watch.
By himself.
Scrooge stares, his brow intently creased. He steps toward the scruffy bearded man.
These are my things. She's stolen my things. I'll have her before a magistrate.
What do you call these?
Bed curtains.
You don't mean to say you took them down. Rings and all, with him lying there.
Why not?
By candlelight, the shopkeeper studies a blanket.
And don't get wax on his blankets.
His blankets? I hope he didn't die of anything catching.
Eh? I wasn't so fond of him as I'd loiter about if he did.
Scrooge looks on with a stricken gaze.
Well, what's your offer then?
The shopkeeper looks over the booty. With glistening eyes, Scrooge shakes his head.
Those are not my things. Yes, they are similar, but the person she speaks of, that could not be me. A similarity, perhaps.
£1.5 and 3. Not a penny more if I was to be boiled for it.
You're hardened, Joe, and no mistake.
I'm always kind to the ladies. That's the way I ruin myself.
Spirit, what perversity is this? I asked to see some emotion in connection with this man's death. You show me only greed and avarice. Let me see some tenderness, some depth of feeling.
The spirit points its bony fingers once more. Scrooge follows their direction, along an alley and down a half flight of stairs. The spirit remains behind, surrounded by mist, as Scrooge approaches the green-painted wooden door of Bob Cratchit's house.
There must be some confusion. Your fellow spirit brought me here earlier. Very well. You're devilish hard to have a conversation with.
Inside.
Suffer the little children to come unto me, and forbid them not. For such is the kingdom of God. Verily I say unto you, whosoever shall not receive the kingdom of God as a little child, he shall not enter therein.
This color hurts my eyes.
Mrs. Cratchit puts down her needlework.
It's better now. This work makes my eyes red. And I wouldn't show red eyes to your father when he comes home. Not for the world. It must be nearly his time.
Past it, rather. I think he walks slower than he used to these last few evenings, Mother.
Yet I've seen him walk home with... with Tiny Tim on his shoulders very fast indeed.
And so have I.
And so have I.
And so have I.
But he was very light to carry. And your father loved him so that... there's no trouble. No trouble. There is your father now.
Hello, Father.
Stooping through the doorway, Cratchit hangs his top hat on a peg, unwinds his long woolen scarf, and joins his family.
Hello, my dear.
He kisses his wife's cheek.
Hello, my dear ones.
Hello, Father.
He sits down.
You're late. We were worried about you.
I'm glad you're home, Father.
I am too.
He lifts Belinda onto his lap.
You've become quite a little armful. The reason that I'm late is because I walked by there today.
Today?
Scrooge watches them.
I couldn't keep away. It's so quiet and green. You shall see it on Sunday. We shall all go on Sunday. I promised him that every Sunday I'd walk.
He presses his face in his daughter's blonde hair.
My little child. My little, little child.
Father, please don't grieve so.
No, I'm sorry. I have all of you. A blessing to be thankful for.
His wife smiles at him.
Do you know who I saw in the street today? Mr. Scrooge's nephew, Fred. And he greeted me in his usual cheerful way. And he saw that I was a little sad. He asked me what was distressing me. And when I told him, he said that he was heartily sorry for it. And,
Robert.
His wife goes to him.
Timmy's part of all of us. But for his sake, we must go on living. So long as we love one another, he will always be alive.
Yes, of course, my dear. But however and whenever we are parted from one another, I'm sure that none of us will ever forget poor Tiny Tim.
No, never.
And when we recollect how patient he was and how mild, although he was but a little child, I'm sure that we will not easily quarrel among ourselves.
I am a happy man. I am a truly happy man.
Scrooge gazes at them.
I asked for tenderness and depth of feeling. And you've shown me that. Nothing more I need see. Take me home.
Now, Scrooge stands in a deserted graveyard of stone slabs.
What is this? I thought we had agreed that you would transport me home.
The spirit drifts past. Its curled finger beckons him.
Inspector, something informs me that the moment of our parting is at hand. I know it, but I know not how. Tell me. What man was that whom we saw lying dead?
The lightning reveals a grave marker, a flat stone slab dusted with snow. Scrooge shakes his head.
No. No, before I draw near to that stone, answer me this. Are the things you have shown me the shadows of the things that will be? Are they the shadows of the things that may be only?
The spirit points to the stone. Scrooge plods forward amid flickers of lightning. All around him, headstones jut crookedly from the ground. He pauses to stare up at the motionless spirit, then turns and kneels stiffly by the side of the gravestone. In the harsh blue moonlight, Scrooge's hand poises an inch above the snow-covered stone. His breath clouds the air.
Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends. I accept it. But if those courses be departed from, the ends must change. Tell me that is so by what you show me.
Scrooge brushes the snow from the stone, revealing an engraved name. Ebenezer Scrooge.
Hear me, I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been but for this visitation. Why show me this if I am past all hope? Good spirit, your nature intercedes for me and pities me. Say that I may change these things by an altered life.
He shuts his eyes.
I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Tell me. Tell me that I may sponge away the writing on this stone. Spare me. Spare me.
He bows his head to the gravestone. Now, back in his own bedroom, Scrooge lifts his head from the rumpled sheets and stares around, alone, blinking away his tears.
My own room. I'm alive.
He gazes heavenward.
Oh, thank you, Spirit. I will keep my promise. I will live in the past, present, and the future. The spirits of all three will strive within me. Oh, heaven and Christmas time be praised for this. I say this on my knees, Jacob Marley. On my knees.
Morning. The tower clock strikes 9. Its tall steeple reaches up to a blue sky. In Scrooge's bedroom, daylight falls across the tattered embroidery of the armchairs by the stove. Scrooge sleeps, slumped on the floor with his head resting against the foot of the bed. He wakes. Blinking, he shows a puzzled frown.
9 o'clock. And daylight. But what day?
He opens the window and peers out.
Hello, you there, boy.
Me, sir?
Yes, you, my good fellow. What day is today?
Today? Why, it's Christmas Day, of course.
Christmas Day? I haven't missed it. The spirits did it all in one night. Well, they can do anything they like, of course they can. Hello, my fine fellow.
Hello.
Do you know the poulterers in the next street but one, on the corner?
I should hope I did.
Intelligent boy, remarkable boy. Do you know if they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging there?
What? The one as big as me?
Delightful boy. Pleasure talking to you. The one as big as you.
It's hanging there now.
Well, go and buy it. Yes, go and buy it and bring them round so that I may tell them where to deliver it. Come back with the man, I'll give you a shilling. Come back in less than 5 minutes, I'll give you half a crown.
The boy dashes off. Scrooge shuts the window and pats his clothes.
I must dress myself. So much to do. I don't lose any time. I was light.
He dances with his gown.
I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy.
He stands on his bed.
I'm as giddy as a drunken man. Merry Christmas to everybody. And a happy new year to the world!
Later, the poulterer brings a feathered turkey in a basket.
If this be a prank, boy, I'll box your ears.
He was in that window. I swear it.
There you are.
This boy here says you wish to purchase this turkey here.
It's quite right. Here's your half crown for a service well rendered.
Thank you, sir.
Splendid boy. Now, there is an address and the price of the turkey. You'll take this fine bird to Bob Cratchit in Camden. Now, the directions are all written down. You leave immediately this very moment.
Yes, sir.
You'll say only that it comes from a friend. And it must be there in time for Christmas dinner.
It will be, sir.
The poulterer puts the turkey in his cart.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Scrooge pays him.
Thank you, sir.
Merry Christmas.
He looks up at the sky.
Wonderful day.
Scrooge strolls off, swinging his walking stick, and passes a choir in the street.
So grant us all a change of heart.
Good morning. Merry Christmas to you.
Like
angels. Yes, exactly. You sing excellently well, yes.
Thank you.
Ah, it is I who thank you for that glorious music on this glorious Christmas day.
Wearing a top hat and a crimson waistcoat under his knee-length frock coat, he nods to two men.
Good morning, John.
It's Poole and Hacking from the charity.
Good morning, John. Merry Christmas to you.
Mr. Scrooge,
That is my name. I fear it is not pleasant to you. Allow me to beg your pardons, and please accept my pledge to the poor and needy for...
He whispers in Poole's ear.
Lord bless me. My dear Mr. Scrooge, are you quite serious?
If you please, and not a farthing less. There are a great many back payments included in that, I assure you.
What can I say to such generosity?
Don't say anything.
My dear sir.
Will you come and see me?
We will. Oh, we will indeed.
I'm very much obliged. Thank you. 50 times.
Thank you.
Now, the poulterer arrives at the Cratchit's door with his turkey.
Yes?
Bob Cratchit?
Yes?
This is for you.
Well, there must be some mistake.
You are Bob Cratchit?
Yes.
Well, there ain't no mistake.
I didn't order this.
This here prize turkey was bought and paid for by a gentleman to be delivered to Bob Cratchit and family in time for Christmas dinner.
What gentleman? What's his name?
Anonymous. He wishes to remain anonymous.
Inside.
Anonymous, you say?
That's what he said, an anonymous gentleman.
Well, who could have sent it?
I have no idea.
Perhaps it's a mistake.
That's what I thought.
It's got our name and address on it, though. What should we do then?
I say we cook it and eat it and have the best Christmas feast we've ever had in our lives.
And I say, Mrs. Cratchit, what a splendid idea.
And God bless us all, everyone.
And God bless us all, everyone.
Now, Scrooge strolls along the snowy sidewalk. In Fred Hollowell's house, Janet opens her present, a jeweled gold bracelet.
Oh, Fred. Oh, it's much too expensive.
But do you like it?
Oh, I love it.
He slips it on her wrist.
Oh, it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Well, then, it belongs upon your wrist, my darling. Merry Christmas.
Oh, Fred, I do love you. Oh, and not just for this.
I know.
Well, who can that be?
Well, no one's expected this, have you?
Fred strides to a front window and peers out.
My God, it's Uncle Ebenezer.
Your uncle? What in the world would he want?
Open the door, Mary. I'm sure I don't know.
The maid opens the door to Scrooge, who smiles.
Fred.
Uncle Ebenezer.
He removes his hat.
May I come in?
Yes, come in. Please.
Thank you.
Fred stares.
Do come in.
Scrooge greets Janet with a grin.
Good afternoon, madam. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you.
Uncle Ebenezer, this is my wife, Janet. Janet, this is Uncle Ebenezer.
It's a pleasure.
More like a surprise, wouldn't you say?
Well, that too.
Well, that's quite true. Quite honestly, it is a surprise. When we spoke yesterday, you made it quite clear, it seemed to me, at least, that you had no intention of accepting my annual invitation.
I made other things clear, too, didn't I, Fred? That Christmas was a humbug, a waste of time and money. A false and commercial festival, devoutly to be ignored.
Yes, basically that was it.
Well, I've come for three reasons. First, to beg your pardon for the things I said about Christmas. That was a humbug, Fred.
Was it?
I didn't know it then, but I know it now. Secondly, I've come to meet your wife.
Well, here she is.
Yes. And a very beautiful woman she is, too.
Thank you.
I was in love once. Would you believe that?
Yes.
But I possessed neither the courage nor the optimism, perhaps the depth of feeling that you two have. Thirdly, if the invitation to dine with you today is still in force, I accept.
Of course it's still in force. Hurrah! I was sure that one day...
You were sure? Well, apparently you were right. Yes, I should like to dine with you and your friends.
You'll be more than welcome.
You like games, don't you?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do.
Uh-huh. Do you ever play simile?
It's one of our favorites.
Perhaps we could play today.
Quite possibly.
I'm very good at it. And should the phrase tight ass be thrown out, the answer is a drum.
Why, yes, sir, it is.
Good.
Scrooge turns to his nephew and pats his shoulder.
Forgive me for saying this, but I see the shadow of my sister in your face. I loved your mother, Fred. For a time there, I forgot just how much I loved her. Perhaps I chose to forget.
He brightens.
Well, now, it isn't too much trouble. I should like to sample some of that punch for which you're so famous.
Of course. You've made us both very happy, Uncle Ebenezer.
Have I? Yes.
He draws them close.
God forgive me for the time I wasted.
Morning. Faint sunlight casts long shadows on the snow as businessmen stride to their work. Scrooge, dressed in his accustomed black, arrives at the counting house and unlocks the small door with his key. Going upstairs, he enters the deserted office.
9 o'clock late again, eh, Cratchit? You'll see about this.
Later, Bob Cratchit comes dashing down the lane, his scarf hastily wound. He reaches the counting house door and bumps against it. It swings open. Steeling himself, Bob settles his top hat firmly and ventures inside. Upstairs, he leaves his hat and scarf on the pegs and stares around the office. It's deserted. Bob sighs with relief and turns to light the candle at his desk.
Mr. Cratchit!
Bob winces and sets down the matchbox.
Yes, sir.
Scrooge emerges from the shadows. A tall window silhouettes his menacing figure. He holds his pocket watch.
Do you know what time it is?
Yes, sir.
What time is it?
Cratchit consults his own watch.
18 minutes past the hour, sir.
18 and a half minutes past the hour. What do you mean, coming here at this time of day?
I'm sorry, sir. I am behind my time.
Yes, I think you are. Step this way, sir, if you will, please.
It's only once a year, sir. It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday.
Well, I'll tell you, my friend, I'm not going to stand for this any longer. Therefore, I am going to double your salary.
He tosses him a money purse.
Double my salary, sir?
Yes, Bob. Yes. A Merry Christmas to you.
Scrooge hugs him.
I'll double your salary for a start, and I'll endeavor to assist your family in any way I can. And Tim will walk again and grow stronger and stronger upon my life, he will. Well, we'll discuss the particulars this afternoon over a Christmas bowl. What's the matter with you?
Cratchit's frown lifts.
Nothing, sir. Well, it's just that... Nothing. Thank you, sir.
My good fellow. We'll make up the fire before we freeze to death. Buy some more coal. Before you dot another eye, Bob Cratchit.
Yes, sir.
The two men share a smile. Then Scrooge settles himself at his desk.
Ebenezer Scrooge was better than his word. He became as good a friend, as good a master, as good a man as the old city knew. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. It was said of Ebenezer Scrooge that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
Scrooge and Tim walk together, hand in hand.
Was
This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Funding provided by Gordon and Laura Gund. Described by Michael Braden. Read by Margot Stage. Major funding for DVS provided by the United States Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org. Credits roll.